Hello and welcome to the Aster Economic Week in Review. My name is John Eckstein. I'm the Chief Investment Officer of Aster Investment Management. I'm joined today by my friend and partner, Rob Stein. Rob, hello.
Hey, John, how are you?
I'm awesome, thank you. We have a nice amount of snow here in New York that's just rapidly turning to ratsicles. Other than that, things are good.
That's the snow that we gave you from over here from last week.
It's still like
you're welcome.
It's like zero in Chicago still, right?
Yeah, but we can't complain. Chicago's average temperature during winter is 5 degrees warmer over the last 5, 6, 7 years. So
we're recording on Friday, February 5th, an hour or so after the payroll number came out. So that's going to be top of mind today. Before we jump into the labor market, I'm going to say where I see the economy in a nutshell is a period of stagnation. You know, we had a strong recovery in the summer. The virus picked up in the fall and winter. And coincident with that, the improvement in the economy has fallen off. I'm guessing that it's going to be until the virus starts to get more under control that we're going to be in the same situation for a while. Do you have any bones to pick with that sort of summary before we jump into the details of today's numbers, Rob?
Not a bone to pick. I mean, if you look at the data, I say that there's very little argument. We had a recovery from the stagnation that you referred to it as. Didn't come back quite as far as what we lost and, you know, kind of petered out. And we're still continuing to, you know, barely tread water. But the connection between that and, you know, maybe money supply growth, asset price, I think there's other things that are occurring that eventually we need to take into place, particularly as we look at the wealth effect. But I agree. That's exactly what the data is suggesting.
Okay, let's jump into today's non-farm payroll report. So we added about 50,000 jobs. That's a little bit worse than expected. Our colleague Nick said that this was going to be the last negative report, was what he said in the last podcast. And I think given that the big negative revisions that we had last month and the large error term, I'm going to give him that. I'm going to say this was a negative report, even though it's technically positive. Unemployment rate improved from 6.7 to 6.3. Part of that was for bad reasons, namely people leaving the labor force. The labor force participation rate is dropped a little bit last month. That's another way of saying the same thing. The underemployment rate improved as well from 11.7% to 11%. Mm-hmm. That is the same. Like there's a little bit of good news there, but there's bad news as well. Before we leave the rates, you know, I want to say that if you look at basically the demographically adjusted employment population ratio. So you say like how many people have jobs relative to the economy. Basically, that number has not changed since October, in essence. Maybe it's gone up a tiny amount. But, you know, we had 61% of Americans had jobs January 2020 and 51% of American jobs in April 2020 in the worst of the recession. And so today, we've got about 58% of Americans having jobs. So we need to get that number back up to 61% sooner rather than later. So some other things to think about with the employment number, the diffusion index, so basically they ask, if you count up how many companies are growing or how many industries are growing rather than shrinking, last month it was 62% of industries were growing, but today it's less than half. It's 48% of industries are growing. The permanent payrolls, long-term unemployment, some of those numbers have ticked up going in the wrong direction. I think this is all a consistent story of stagnation for the last few months. Mm-hmm. Again, I would tie that mainly to the virus.
No doubt. No doubt. You know, John, I think if you look year over year rather than month over month, you start to see a picture. What are we, about 2.5-3% higher unemployment than we were about a year ago at this time? You know, clearly big bounce, leveling off, whether we get above that or not over the next 6 months. But I think that's telling. The fact that after we've had such a substantial shutdown, highest unemployment rate ever, and we're here a year later with some economic growth, GDP, you know, the ISM numbers, which we'll talk about shortly, are at levels that are somewhat surprising, that they continue to not accelerate, but not crash.
Yeah, I think that you can see, so the phrase people are using is a K-shaped recovery, something's going up, something's going down. I think that that's accurate also in the sectoral analysis too, right? So you think the manufacturing sector is going very strong. People can still buy stuff, right? They can't buy experiences as much as they want to. They can still buy stuff. And so they're taking some of that money they used to spend at, you know, Applebee's, whatever, and we're buying big screen TVs. And that is reflected in the manufacturing numbers, whether they're the ISM manufacturing numbers or the industrial production numbers.
But yeah, they're getting experiences in a different way. You know,
the experience of teaching their kids, that's what they're getting.
Yeah, but you know, someone like myself who is buying new things because cooking at home. I mean, listen, we could get philosophical about the pivots, but the numbers are the numbers, and you're right. The data is showing a stall, not a decline yet. It was a good bounce. We all knew that it wasn't going to bounce up and over where we were.
Yeah.
And as we look at it right now, no argument, right? And you could say impressive bounce to here, you know, everything from spending, consumption, somewhat paradoxical savings, housing, but now what?
Yeah. So again, like, you know, we're about 12 million jobs below where we should be. And, you know, if it's 100,000 jobs a month, like that's going to be a long time to get back to it. Even at 1 million jobs a month, it would be another year before we're back to where we were last February. So we will see how that evolves.
Yeah. And not to speculate too much, but I'm guessing you're going to have 100, 100, 100, and then 500,000 or 1 million. You're going to have a spike up when, yeah. I mean, there's going to be some sort of whistle all clear. And I don't know where we see it first. Is it going to be schools? Like something's going to reopen and it's going to be a bit of a catalyst for economic data improvement, psychological improvement. And just like an economy, it'll have, you know, the hot dog guy back in business because the factory next door is at, you know, full go. And then you'll see the employment numbers have a spike.
Yeah, I just saw Tiffany's announced today that their employees have to be all back in the office on March 1st. So
they're doing a decent job of that. I mean, are you getting saliva tested on a daily basis at your home?
No. My 10-year-old gets saliva tested once a week for school, but we don't. I haven't gotten tested. I haven't gone anywhere. I haven't left the state. So from the tepid news, maybe we should go to the news that's a little bit more bullish. And that would be the purchasing managers indices. So again, those are diffusion indexes. So you go out and ask the manufacturers or service companies, how's business? And business is good according to this metric. Manufacturing is declined slightly, but is still at an extremely high level of 58. That means that 58% of the businesses surveyed said the business was better than last month. Within that, you see very strong growth in new orders. You see very strong growth in inflation also. The services index also did well last month. So the prices paid though, Rob, I know you're on the inflation. We're not seeing much yet, but you still see a big jump in inflation this year, right?
I do. And for all of the reasons we spoke about before, if we touch on wages and average hourly earnings, I think that's another component of inflation, the money supply growth, how the money supply growth is growing. I still believe that it's not going to be transitory and the value of a dollar is going to buy a lot less in a year from now.
Yeah, I think we should have a session dedicated to the Fed sometime, but you know, they've said that they're going to look through some of the early inflation. And so we'll see if that finally gets inflation up for more than a month or two. I guess I see it as probably largely transitory still.
Yeah, I could see why, but you know, the expectations drive that a lot. You're right. We should have a conversation where we roll through the data and then pivot to the Fed and maybe a specific debate on a particular topic, whether it's inflation or, you know, something else a little bit more subjective.
Yep. Pivoting to wage and salary data, which also came out last week, we see a small increase in total income. Part of the increase was due to an increase in transfer payments, mainly unemployment benefits. Those benefits are going to increase further, are increasing further already, even as we speak, because the $600 unemployment supplement has started to get paid out. You can see that in the daily treasury statements. So that's a number which is going to improve. That's already baked in the cake. And that's people have started to get their stimulus checks as well. So that salary number is very positive. At the same time, if you look at consumer spending, that is not increasing. So this is, again, we've said several times that there's a large and growing stack of money on the sidelines that's waiting to come in for the Biden boom.
That might be what we were talking about before, those spikes that we see as the economy reopens.
Yeah. Yeah, there's going to be So I guess I'm not sure there's going to be a signal event, which you're going to see sort of a sharp signpost from one day to another. But I do think people are, you know, the virus is going to recede. More and more people get vaccinated. More and more things open up. And that's going to get a little bit month by month. And I think that's going to start, you know, right now. I was looking to see if the jobless claims have started to improve. But I see that that's going to be sort of the canary in the coal mine. Jobless claims have been static for, you know, 6 months now at, you know, 800,000 a week. That drops to 600. If that starts dropping 700, 600,000, then we're going to start to see, I think that's going to be the canary in the coal mine for the next stage upwards in the economy.
I agree. I think jobless claims tell a lot.
So before we've touched on this a little bit, but before we wrap up, the other big new economic news of the day is the stimulus. Mm-hmm. So it seems like, where we are today, the state of play is that the Senate has approved a reconciliation approach, which means that they only need 51 votes to pass it. It does mean that they can only put budget stuff in the stimulus. So that puts some things at risk in terms of the, like, for example, you might not be able to have a national $15 minimum wage. Though you probably could have a national $15 minimum wage if you structure it like you have to pay a tax of 100% of the wage if it's less than $15, something like that, right? So you could probably, there are ways, all these rules are just cockamamie and they're just made up. And if they want to get around them, they just vote to get around them. So it doesn't make any sense to me. But anyway, it seems like a bigger plan is going to pass than a smaller plan. I think Democrats took the lesson from 2009 that 2009, they thought they were going to spend a little bit of money. If they needed more money, they'd just come back and spend more money. But that's not the way the politics worked, right? And so this time they realize they're only going to get one bite at the apple. And so they're going to jam everything in that they can into the first bill because it's going to be their only bill. So that's the plan, is, you know, the $1.9 trillion plan is the big chunks of it are, you know, $500 million in direct payments, $350 mm-hmm. billion in unemployment insurance, $350 billion in local governments, $150 in pandemic response, $150 in schools, ba, 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 ba. All of a sudden, you're talking about real money. So I guess I expect something pretty close to the Biden plan to pass. Do you have any thoughts on the stimulus and what's going to get through before we talk about like the effects of it?
I agree that a lot of it's going to get through. You actually have a tough time making an argument that a negative argument for it. And with, yep. I think the vice president took her first responsibility of breaking a tie this week or today. So I agree. I think a lot of this is going to get through. I might disagree that this is their only and biggest chance. I think if things don't pick up, particularly as the economy starts to reopen, I would expect an additional form of stimulus, maybe a little bit more targeted at something specific, but I don't think they're done yet. They're getting a good result. Obviously, we can see the bounce in the data that's very compelling over the summer. So I wouldn't be surprised if even another stimulus plan somehow put in place later this year.
Well, I mean, that would be a lot, right? Like, so
that's where you consider a lot, $2 trillion.
So I mean, I guess like right now where we are is, so let's say the CBO says that we're $50 billion a month below where we should be in GDP, right? Mm-hmm. And you could criticize that number and say, no, it's $150 billion. So, okay, fine. So it's $150 billion. So someplace between 50 and 150 billion we're below. But like, if I do the math right, like between the 900 billion we passed and the 1.9 trillion we're gonna pass, that's like, yeah. 300, that's like 300, and those are all going to be spent in like 9, 12 months, that's like $300 billion a month to fill a $100 billion gap. And that's not including what I was just saying, what we were just saying about there's another $2 trillion of excess savings.
Yeah, and also, I think that's the unknown, right? The trillions of dollars on deposit at your friendly banks, a high savings rate. What pulls that out? Right now, I think people are comfortable with it.
I think actually the savings and the spending are going to two different places, right? Like the savings is focused on high income people who just don't have the ability to spend all that money as quickly as they'd want to. And so I think that the savings money will sort of trickle out slowly. But, you know, when you have the direct payments, you're going to get $500 billion directly to people who earn less than $100,000 a year. Like, they're going to spend all that money. So I think that money is going to be much sort of more higher impact than the savings money in this case.
We spoke about this before we started. The high end, I had mentioned that it's bigger and more than I ever even imagine than the things that they're doing. Both in business, you can't turn on a business news channel and see a new vehicle being created or literally billions of dollars going into things like SPACs that are ultimately buying businesses and specifically and allegedly trying to become more productive. So I think there's an upper crust of the savings that is going to find its way into hopefully productive economic growth. And that, I think, is going to be one of the drivers. Things that will employ, things that will change the unemployment rate, GDP, done by some of the stimulus that was put in the system before and capitalism working.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll
be interesting, John, to see where the velocity, you know, you've made this point in podcasts past. The dollar doesn't disappear that you use from your stimulus check. It could go to buy groceries or pay rent, but it still moves. It's still moving along the system.
Yeah, I mean, so that's the thing, right? Is that we want the stimulus money to be going to people who are going to spend it, not save it. Like ultimately, sure, like savings is lent out and uses capital for other productive
purposes.
It's
investment, right?
But there's no shortage of capital right now, right? Like rates are zero.
Well, that's my point, right? So the system works. The system works.
Yeah, if people wanted to borrow money, they can borrow money in general. So, but, you know, if we're giving money to people with a much higher propensity to spend, then that's going to have a bigger multiplier effect, in my opinion. And so we will see when we start to see the signs of that perking up.
Right.
I think we will leave it there unless you have something else, Rob.
No, I think we covered a lot of things and where we feel the economy is right now, nowcasting. And the AEI, the Astro Economic Index, it in of itself has rebounded quite nicely, right? And it too is sort of staying in this range, but not accelerating.
Yeah, that's a good point. So it is in the area that we usually associate with solid economic growth. It has not improved in the last several months, hasn't deteriorated notably, but has been stagnant for a few months. So yeah, that's sort of the consistent story. Great. And if you are interested in getting more information about the Astro Economic Index, you can check out our website, AstroIM, that's astroinvestmentmanagement.com. And you can also find more information on our Astro Research app. Just look at your favorite app store. Thanks very much for tuning in, and we will see you next week. Bye.
Bye.
To learn more about Astor Investment Management's research and strategies, please visit us on the web at www.astoriam.com or stay up to date by following us on LinkedIn, Twitter, and our app is also available on the App Store and Google Play. Thank you. Astor Investment Management, LLC, is a SEC-registered investment advisor. All information contained herein is for informational purposes only. This is not a solicitation to offer investment advice or services in any state where to do so would be unlawful. Analysis and research are provided for informational purposes only, not for trading or investing purposes. All opinions expressed are as of the date of publication and subject to change. They are not intended as investment recommendations.